So people that are, you know, complaining, including me, like, okay, this is a little boring. You know, if you look into the future, a couple of years, not 20, because that's impossible, actually. But if you look into the future, like a couple of years, it's really hard not to be amazed by the power that are being unleashed. You know, whether or not AGI takes place, this is awesome what is happening. AI is so central because it's going everywhere.
Welcome to the Conversations on Applied AI podcast, where Justin Grammans and the team at Emerging Technologies North talk with experts in the fields of artificial intelligence and deep learning. In each episode, we cut through the hype and dive into how these technologies are being applied to real-world problems today. We hope that you find this episode educational and applicable to your industry and connect with us to learn more about our organization at appliedai.mn. Enjoy.
Welcome, everyone, to the Conversations on Applied AI podcast. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Antonio Defensa. Antonio has a Master's of Arts and a PhD in Romantic Languages, Literature, and Linguistics from Cornell University. He has envisioned and wrote a project of a chatbot trained on philosophers and poets that is capable of meaningful interactions. Additionally, he is currently a futurist providing inspiration, suggestions, and solutions for the period of humanity's transition to the time when it will coexist with superintelligence. So that's awesome. I'm super excited to have Antonio on the program today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I talked a little bit about, you know, I guess your degree and your background, but, you know, how did you land in this space, I guess, based on all the stuff that you've kind of like learned in university and gotten you to where you are today?
Well, that was towards the end of my PhD project. Basically, my project was on literature and philosophy, linguistics, these kind of things. And I was launched toward the academic career, become professor, do literature and these kind of things. But towards the end, I realized that I was focused with my studies on the past. And also, I wasn't seeing what I was doing as the best use of my skills, my intelligence. So this was one part of it. And the other part was that I began reading about AI and exponential technologies during that time. And the implication of what is happening currently, you know, blew my mind. And I wanted to know more and hear more. So I came back from the States. I had to take a long break because I was ill. But during that time, I read a lot. I read a lot of books and I read all the classics. So Singularity is Near from Ray Kurzweil. And then I read another number of books, which were a little bit more recent, so like books from Stephen Kotler or even Superintelligence by Max Tegmark, Life 3.0, like, and all these kind of people. And so I began to be interested in try to understand a little bit these things about AI, AGI, or artificial superintelligence. And then at that point, I was mesmerized. I went kind of crazy because I could see all the ramifications that this research has, not only for our society, not only for how we experience the world and we experience ourselves, but also for what it means to knowledge in itself, to be able to produce more intelligence, whatever that means. And so I read books, and then I got tired of just reading books, started reaching out to people, and I was like, okay, I'm going to do another PhD now. Maybe cognitive sciences, maybe something else. But then I met this guy who said, are you crazy? Why another PhD? Why don't you do something different? Do a bootcamp. So data science bootcamp.
Okay.
Had no idea about all these things. And I had no prior experience to coding, and I started doing. I prepared, and I joined this bootcamp, and then I did this thing for 3 months in Berlin, and then now I'm after almost a year, I've done a couple of projects, but I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do with this, if coding is my way or not, because I like coding, but I like words and ideas more, because you know data scientists are experts, users of the tool.
Yes.
But what I realized is that when I was talking to my peers, for example, that despite them being more skilled than I was, because I was the only non-quant background person in the room, mm-hmm. none of them had read the books that I had read, and none of them could see the potential. Well, not that they couldn't see where this technology is leading us, but they could not appreciate the breadth and the length of the kind of things that I can envision. So do I want to be like a tech guy, or do I want to do something more higher level to help people map the world that is unraveling before our eyes at increasing speed, as you know, of course.
Yeah. Well, man, a lot there that you talked about. I mean, you know, you're talking to somebody who is probably one of those mathematical thinkers. That's what I did in college. I did math and physics, and then I got really into software development and got a master's in software. And so I know what you mean about just getting in the lane, right? I just get in the lane and I'm just going to write code. But I do think increasingly more and more people are hiring and getting hired because they can take that 1,000-foot view. So my perspective is it's good to know the details of it, but not, you certainly, it shouldn't feel like you're stuck, have to be stuck in that every day, right? If you want to level up and use all that information that you've gained to have a more broader perspective, I would feel like there's still plenty of opportunities out there for that. I mean, you're doing some consulting a little bit with companies?
I'm doing some coaching right now. And then I joined a think tank that's specialized on transhumanism, you know, merging with AGI, unleashing the singularity. Like the guy who runs and who's built this think tank is a hardcore transhumanist who's written like 5 books in these issues. And so sure. I'm doing some work with him. I'm producing content. I'm writing articles, doing research, and trying to figure out where I'm going with this, which is not clear yet. Because like making all of this knowledge practical right now is becoming a little bit of a struggle for me. Everybody's talking about AI right now. Okay. And all the tools that are coming out, and everybody is getting an understanding of what these instruments are. But my interest is a little bit higher than this. It's like, okay, but what if and when, you know, things become a little more complex, what if we nail AGI? People are saying, oh, you know, maybe AGI is never going to happen. Okay, but we have somebody like Elon Musk who built a company, which is Neuralink, to actually provide the infrastructure that we might need in case we decide that the only way to go is to merge with AGI, for example, which is I'm trying to write an article about this, which is kind of crazy, but this is where we're going.
Are you scared about AGI? And by the way, if you want to mention the name of any of the companies or whatever, you know, feel free to do that, because we have transcriptions and we have like liner notes for each one of these episodes. So feel free to talk about any of that stuff if you want. But I am curious about this think tank or stuff you're writing. Are you scared? Are you concerned? Are you happy for AGI? Where do you sort of feel like we're headed right now?
No, I'm not scared. I'm an optimist. I don't think that everything is going to be rosy and easy, that we're going to, you know, unfold heaven on earth without any struggle and seamlessly, as though we were building a video game or something. I don't think that this is the case. But on the other end, I'm not freaked out, because I'm entranced by the capabilities that we are unleashing right now. Even without the AGI, we are increasingly becoming more capable of manipulating information and matter to a point that we are always more powerful, and so if this last bit could come around, which is AGI, then it's really hard to envision how the world is going to look like, especially if we're going to merge with it, for example, which is again only one way to go, and it's scary. But then again, if you think about it, it's not even that's strange, because we are already in deep relationship with our tools. We always use our tools. And so Neuralink, for example, is just, and we already carry tools in our bodies. We get heart surgery, pacemakers, and so we have already become cyborg, as he says. So it's kind of normal. It's just with the brain that we're a little more concerned and freaked out, rightly so, I think. It's more excitement, because a lot of the great scholars, you know, Stuart Russell or Ted Mark or Bostrom, everybody's really focused on talking about the risks. We need to get it right. Because if we don't get it right, things can go really bad. And I get that part. I was actually helping, are you familiar with the Millennium Project? Jerome Glenn. So it's an international world organization that has different chapters all over the world and has laid out some key areas of study, you know, food, water, you know, climate change, and they produce research basically, and they help governments like figure out their policies to address these issues. So I'm reaching out to a lot of futurists, and turns out that this Jerome Glenn is producing the first paper about AGI for the European community, because basically politicians still don't even mention it. And so I helped him a little bit. You know, I read this paper and I'm helping him a little bit to improve it.
Yeah, so you're still pretty optimistic on this, on all this technology. You mentioned the word transhumanist, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could define what that means. I think it might be outside of the general vocabulary.
So transhumanist is somebody who claims that the interaction with our technologies is going to be more intimate over time, to the point that we're going to incorporate the technologies that we deal with. For instance, you know, if you think about Neuralink, so Neuralink is right now is a Bluetooth microcomputer. It's as big as a, I think, 25 cents or even smaller than that, that you apply on your brain, and you connect it through some very thin wires directly on your brain, basically. And the idea of this tool is that for the first thing you can do is you can access your phone and your computer telepathically, basically. And this has already been demonstrated, like, monkeys can do that. They can play Pong and they can write things just thinking about
them.
Just by thinking. The cool thing is that this tool, the idea is that this tool can restore vision. This tool can help, you know, people to acquire again movement where there has been paralysis. Because the idea is that the human body is made of wires and electricity, and sometimes these wires, which is the spine and the nerves, get interrupted. Yes. And so with these tools, you know, we can restore that. So a transhumanist is a person who says, okay, we're going there and it's fine. We like that because they see that not only we can restore things that once were broken, but we can also augment our cognition and our powers through these tools, and they welcome this progress, this change. It depends on how you want to call it, because it depends on where you stand, but this kind of change is welcome, an increasing merger with the technologies that we use every day. Transhumanists are okay with that. And then there is the element of, you know, the longevity, because people claim that we might be able to hit escape velocity. You know what it is? It's the idea that at some point, for every year you live, science is gonna able to elongate your life a year more, and so
I live forever.
Well, the idea is that you might live indefinitely. Forever, nothing is forever, not even the universe, but indefinitely. But the movement is very wide, and there are a lot of different people in it, so a lot of different thinkers, a lot of different takes. But yeah, so this is what transhumanism means. It's very
interesting.
Long.
Okay. Well, good. Yeah. No, I had sort of heard of it on the peripheries, but I actually had heard somebody actually, you know, define it. So I like that. And obviously there's a lot of books, and this, I like what you said at the beginning with regards to you didn't want to be reading about the past. You're more interested about reading about the future. And so those are the types of books, those are the types of, you know, specialties and subjects, those are types of authors that you're sort of reading is in this transhumanist area. Is that where you think you should continue to spend your effort? Or are you finding other areas within that that are more exciting?
More exciting than AGI and the singularity? No, I don't think there is anything more exciting than that, because it's, so if you think about it, so the idea of understanding, because in order to produce intelligence, you need to understand it. Intelligence and creativity, one could argue they're the same thing or not, but we could discuss about this, because intelligence is the recognition of patterns that then allows you to do a lot of things, right? But creativity is basically needs also this understanding of patterns to generate. So anyways, so there is this idea that intelligence is this basic element of the universe. It's not just us. It's not, doesn't belong just to humans. It just belongs to animals. I think it belongs everywhere because every time you see an orderly structuring of matter that answers to a problem somehow, I think that's intelligence. And so the fact that we are understanding intelligence to the very deepest level, it's the holy grail of knowledge, and the holy grail of philosophy, the holy grail of science. Like, you couldn't get any deeper than that, I think. And this is why I don't think I would ever want to care about anything else. I mean, besides the other thing, yeah. So it's super exciting,
Well, you know, you talked about literature and linguistics and writing and stuff like that, and sort of the buzzword or the buzz technology going on right now is all this stuff with ChatGPT.
Yes.
Right. So OpenAI and all this ChatGPT, it's all over the news, man. I can't open up another browser window without reading more about it. What are your thoughts? Have you had a chance to experiment around with it or do any stuff with it?
Yeah, I did actually. And I'll tell you something. Like, I, as much as I'm excited with all these tools, I like to read about them. I read about them more than I use them. So Midjourney, like all these tools that people have been using to produce even art But with ChatGPT, I've used it quite intensively for 3 or 4 days because I've heard a lot about the writing capacity of this tool, and I said, okay, you know, let me give it a try. And when you open it, it says that the tool is optimized for chatting, and I tried to chat, okay, and it was pretty boring because every question I will make, I will try to poke, you know, are you conscious? Are you aware?
Yes.
Are you alive?
Yes.
Can you tell the truth? All the answers that I was getting over and over was like, no, I'm a model. I'm not made to be sentient and I'm not made to be aware. And so I was always getting like this kind of answers, which was like, okay, you're a little boring. I like to talk with the other models from OpenAI. They would claim that they are sentient. They would claim that they're conscious. And when you ask them, like, okay, what do you mean? They give you an explanation, which many times makes sense. And so it's interesting to fool around. Anyway, so I played with ChatGPT for a little bit, and then I was like, okay, this is boring. So I left it for a while. Then I was writing an article. I'm hearing that some people are complaining and saying that the tool, the model, is not very deep, that the writing is superficial, that the writing is shallow, seems articulate, but it's not, and so on and so forth. But the way I used it was different because I gave it formed paragraphs. And then I say, okay, can you edit this paragraph? Take care of the grammar, the misspellings, and, you know, all some inconsistencies between verbs and so on and so forth. The result was great. And then I was saying, okay, can you flip the order of the ideas? And that was done too. And then I was saying, okay, can you optimize? I was using terms like rhetorical terms, like, okay, can you optimize for clarity? Can you optimize for cohesion? Can you optimize for coherence? And all those things were happening. Or at some point, I also said, you know, I would like this to sound a little more dramatic. Can you do that? And that happened too. So I ended up spending about 3 days co-working, doing it like back and forth. But I was not just being fed the things from. I was giving it my own ideas and say, okay, can you, at some point I said, okay, I give it a paragraph where I had an argument and I said, okay, what do you think about the argument? Is it weak? Is it strong? What is it missing? What are the shortcomings of this argument? Can you list them? Can you tell me what else I could add? And all these kind of things were answered always. And I wasn't necessarily having the entire time brilliant answers. But that doesn't matter, because if this is the level of this technology now, what's going to happen in a year, 2 years, three, five? So people that are, you know, complaining, including me, like, okay, this is a little boring. You know, if you just, you know, look into the future, a couple of years, not 20, because that's impossible, actually. But if you look into the future, like a couple of years, it's really hard not to be amazed by the powers of that are being unleashed right now. It's awesome. You know, whether or not AGI takes place, this is awesome what is happening. And AI is so central because it's going everywhere. So
yes,
it's going everywhere and it's allowing us to do things that we could barely dream about a while ago. So I don't know if you heard from the Washington Post this morning, there came an article, I think yesterday or this morning, an article that says that there are some, I don't remember the university in the US, but basically there are some, there's this article that says that scientists nailed nuclear fusion. What is nuclear fusion? It's basically the same process that takes place in the universe when a star comes to life. Hello? We can produce the same reaction to bring stars into existence on Earth. You don't think that these people, that these scientists were using deep learning models to understand this? It's not just deep learning, of course.
Yes.
But you don't think that AI plays any role in this? It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy doing this podcast is because, you know, the whole point is applications of artificial intelligence, and it feels like the applications are never going to end. Like the next guest I get on is going to be talking about something where AI is applying to a completely different vertical, completely different business, or a completely different, you know, problem, I guess, or challenge that we have in the world, and it just continues to sort of build on top of each other. So it is fascinating. You know, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing your story about your experience with ChatGPT. I think it's kind of mimics kind of mine as well, right? I got on there. I was trying to, you know, one of the first questions that I asked it, I was like, tell me the value of pi.
Wow.
Right. And so it sat there for a long time and I was like, what's it going to do? Because I was hoping it was just going to be dumb and it was going to get into this loop, you know, where it would say 3.14159 and it was just going to continue to sit there. And so it sat there. And I was like, what's this thing going to do? And finally came back and said that it's an irrational number that it goes on to infinity. And that's all it really gave me. And I said, well, give me pi to the 50th place. And it did. It basically wrote it out on the screen. And so I was like, well, give me pi all the way to the end, right? And I was taking the stance kind of you were of like, well, let's just manipulate this thing. Let's sort of like kind of push it, see if I can find its weaknesses. And once you step back, like what you did after a couple of days and think about it, it's like, well, how can I use this as a tool? How can I collaborate with this thing? Then I think that's where I think it's going to be really cool is we're going to realize as a race, as a human race, that we're sort of better together, you know, with these machines. And I haven't used it to write paragraphs and stuff yet, but I have used another tool called copy.ai, which I'm finding has been really, really interesting. I tell people, I'm not a very creative writer. I didn't come up writing a lot. I came up more on the sciences side. But what's cool is you can give it a bunch of broad concepts, and I'm sure they're using GPT under the covers in some capacity. Most all companies are. And you give it these broad concepts, you sort of say, well, I want to sound strong or authoritative, or I want it to sound cheerful. You know, you can give it some sort of ways. And then it sort of spits out a outline for you first that you can sort of tweak and adjust. And then you can click another button and it just essentially dumps out, you know, like a 1,000-word sort of essay. And I found it to be very powerful. Now, this isn't something that you would just publish on day one. What it does for me is it actually brings out some other concepts that I'm like, oh, wow, it kind of went down this path of writing the article this way that I would have never thought of. And exactly. So I lift and pull pieces out of there and then I expand further on it. But it's a great sounding board. It's a great sort of like
exactly. Person
riding shotgun or like a wingman, you know, to basically have a little creative writer next to me. That's where I think it's really, really powerful. And I think that's where we're going to see some really interesting applications of it in the future.
Yeah, and you know, I also tried the like similar experiment with the, for instance, I said, oh, you know, Elon Musk, I had this Neuralink presentation a couple of days ago, and I want to write an article. Can you pitch me 5 ideas in a three lines for each ideas? Yes, of course. Blah, 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 blah. And so he gave me 5 ideas. And then I was like, oh, okay, I like number 3. Can you expand a little bit on number 3? And then it got larger. And then I said, oh. And so the thing is that if you let the model do everything, it's really hard, for now at least, to come up with something deep, because this is what you high level quality writing is has some depth, has breadth, has width, as a, like a number of these kind of things. But I don't think that machines are ready to do that. However, I haven't seen it. Let's say that. But if instead of just expecting the thing to do everything on its own, you kind of say, okay, let's do this together and help me thinking through this, like an assistant, like a very patient assistant, actually. Because you can ask to do something over and over a million times. It will never tell you to go to hell, which is great.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
So if you're a little paranoid about getting something right, or like the way your way, let's say, okay, you can ask it 100 times. Like, can you redo this? Can you redo it? Can you redo it like this? Changing this comma, changing this article. So it's too cheerful, a little less, a little more. Oh, you know, so it's bringing the creative process on a smoother path. And it's becoming less intimidating also for people to sit down and create, because what really freaks people out while writing is the beginning.
Yeah.
That white page scares everyone. And it's really hard to feel that first white page. But once you can do that, and something starts coming up, then it's a matter of moving things up and down and then add in between. But it's easier. It becomes increasingly easier in the process. And so I think these tools are helping us with exactly the first bit, which is the beginning, making it less painful, so to speak. We'll see where it takes us. Like, there is a very smart man, actually, who wrote a post where he was complaining about the fact that by outsourcing our writing to machines, we actually might lose it, the capacity of writing. So maybe our skills will go in atrophy, he was talking about. And this is something worth thinking about. But on the other end, it reminds me of Plato, who wrote this dialogue in 400 BC about writing, like about writing, because when writing came around, it was like, is writing a good thing for us? And Plato wrote a long argument saying, well, not really. I don't know if he believed that, but he wrote this counter argument to writing. It says, well, what's going to happen to our memory once we start writing everything? Because our memory is gonna become weaker. But okay, look at what happened. Maybe our memory did become weaker. But on the other end, the amount of things that writing has allowed civilization per se are basically endless, which means that maybe some skills get resized somehow, but then other skills enter into play and new ways of interacting with the world take place. So I'm thinking that probably this very same thing will happen right now. Maybe the meaning of writing will somehow shift and change. And maybe I like to write and I write a lot. Maybe I will become a little less skilled in carving perfect sentences. Maybe. But I can also see, you know, other skills popping up, like, okay, I will learn to, you know, to play with 10 ideas and see them all written, as opposed to, and you cannot do this when you have to write yourself. You cannot write 1,000 words 10 times for each kind. It will take forever. At some point, you have to be more economical when you want to write. And so there are a lot of other things that can come around, which are awesome.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can't have the ways of the past and the ways of the future in some ways. So I think it feels like you have to give up something in order to change in advance. So I think about, yes, like once people created the calculator, then you didn't actually have to do longhand arithmetic anymore, right? So we became not good at adding and subtracting, multiplying and dividing, but is that so bad, right? We have computers that do that for us. I think about the keyboard. Like, my handwriting is terrible. I can barely even read my own handwriting. And it's largely because I'm on a keyboard. I don't really handwrite very much stuff at all anymore, right? So I've lost that skill.
But you acquired another one. So you code, right? Do you use Copilot?
You know, I have not used Copilot yet. No,
oh.
I haven't... delved into that. I've read a lot about it. I've seen people using it. I think it's going to have its own applications. I think it's going to be the same way, honestly. It's going to give you, it'll give you boilerplate stuff. But once it comes down to the details, I still feel like there's going to be a lot of inputs that the human is still going to be, you know, doing. But of course, running it back through an algorithm. There are already optimization algorithms. You can basically have your code like run through to make sure, oh, am I looping this the most effectively way? A bunch of different suggestions. So, but yeah, I mean, I can write a lot faster using a keyboard than I can if I were to be handwriting everything out longhand, right? So there's a huge benefit.
As long as you don't just lose things, but we keep acquiring some others, I don't think that there's really going to be a problem. I don't think that we're going to become stupid. I can see that the internet being flooded by, and God knows how many of the things that we read already are written by AI. But on the long run, we're just going to shift our position and learn to do other things because we can focus on, like, for example, when I was doing when I was writing this paper with GPT-Chat, I was very focused on details. Something that I can do only towards the end, normally, when I'm writing something myself. So I have to spend a lot of time like putting things in order. And then after I've done most of the job, I can look at details. But with doing this piece with the model, I could pay way more attention to details that I could otherwise do. And I got there faster. That's the thing. It's just fast.
Well, I think the other thing that sort of popped in my head when you're talking about writing was, you know, you've used the words knowledge and intelligence before, you know, mm-hmm. as you've been talking about it. And I think these machines are becoming very knowledgeable. Obviously, they're being fed billions and billions and trillions of words, right? Mm-hmm. And they understand sentence structure. So I would argue that they're becoming very, very knowledgeable and intelligent. But they're not becoming very creative, and maybe that's where my head is going. Is I think the humans still have the creativity. They're able to take a look at things that have happened in the past, I feel like, and create something new and unique that hasn't been done before. And I feel like, at least when it comes to artificial intelligence, it's still basing its future work off of prior work, and it's not actually bringing in that creativity, like that 1 + 1 = 3. Right? What? Does that make any sense to you? Does that jive with what you're saying?
I know. Yeah, I don't know if I agree with this. You know, because I don't know. If you look at philosophy, if you look at take my field, you know, philosophy, literature, you know, and it's filled with extremely creative people. Now, what does creative really means? That you come up with something that never, ever, ever anyone ever thought about it. The answer is no. What you do when you create something new is that you take things that have been done, said, and thought in the past, and you rearrange them to a novel order, and you repurpose. But you are very, very much situated in a continuum where you don't have emptiness behind you. You have whoever else came before you. And so you're not really, because the word to create, it's actually a very interesting word because it's a biblical term. And it technically means to make something out of nothing. So to create is the activity of God who creates the world out of absolute nothingness. That's to create, okay? What we do, it's not really create, we generate. Because the word generation means, you know, life from life, so to speak, so things from things. If you look at the contemporary philosopher, for example, there is no word or concept that you cannot take and identify and trace back to some origin that dates back to the beginnings of thought. So you can always do that. And you always realize, like, and the more the more I learned, for example, with philosophy, the more I realized that the very most important things were really thought at the beginning. And then what we did over time was just to try to figure out a little more what others had said. And so do artists who always quote each other. It's just that when your eyes is not necessarily trained, you don't really realize. And so in this regard, I think that machines can become creative because we don't invent from zero. We just repurpose and improve what other have been done before us.
Interesting. I see what you mean. Yeah. So humans aren't being creative anyways, so machines can do that just as well as humans.
Yeah, or creativity is not what we think it is. Like, there is not this element of nothing. Because, you know, the phone, okay, you know, there were letters, okay, but there were words. So there is always something that was before and that was rearranged and remade. And even if we are, think about our conversation right now, are you inventing the words that you're using? No, they've been said, I don't know how many trillions of times before, okay?
Sure.
What we're doing right now, why is this conversation original? It's because the patterns around which our words are structured right now are novel because they're taking place right now. But we're using terms that are incredibly old. And so this is the creativity. It's novel arrangement and repurposing of what's old and already there.
I think about when someone creates, well, you mentioned the telephone, for example, like, you know, somebody had, there was an invention that mm-hmm. happened, or somebody is an entrepreneur and they create a new business that has never been done before. You know, they see an opportunity or they take on a new task and build a new organization. You know, part of that's like, you're right. They are just taking concepts from everything that they have learned along the way. What makes it hard for me to think is would a machine be able to do that same thing? Would a machine be able to see a particular need in the market and then say, I'm going to go ahead and start a business in this space? I don't know. You know, again, like I say, this is kind of what I'm saying. It's like, I'm trying to think of, you know, how are humans elevating themselves to like kind of see and play things out into the future that maybe a machine wouldn't do.
So. Yeah, you know, you're very right. Or also you see all these images, you know, Midjourney or something, and it looks like, you know, machines have become creative and so on and so forth. I'm like, okay. Now, the point is, are we gonna ever have something like the Sixtine Chapel that has the same kind of importance that it will be generated by a machine? I don't know. Maybe, but we will know this only in, you know, few years. It's just a matter of, but you know, the business side, it's cool because you think business, I think, you know, literature, culture, but the processes are the same because you're still trying to find something that no one else has done before and that can generate, it can solve problems or generate meanings in ways that have not otherwise have been done before. To reach to that kind of creativity that you're talking about, you need AGI, you need the next level of stuff, which is still speculative, theoretical, who knows, you know?
Yeah, I feel like we've talked it back in a big circle. That's what we sort of talked about to begin with, was singularity and sort of where things are going in the future around super intelligence. So for our listeners, I guess, you know, you sound like you're from Italy. Is that right? Is that where you're at right now?
Yeah.
But yet you've been in the U.S. It sounds like you've been in Berlin. You've sort of seen other parts. I don't know if you can comment on this, but I'm kind of curious what you're seeing from your appearance, from a European standpoint and versus the U.S. and when it comes to these new technologies. Do you see anything? Because, I mean, I'm born and raised in the United States and I've lived here my entire life. So I don't really see much from the outside, but curious to know if you see anything different being in Italy or the United States. Probably laws or rules and regulations, universities, I guess, stuff that you're writing.
I can tell you, we recently had elections, okay? And I don't think that the word artificial intelligence technology was ever mentioned during campaigns, for example. This is to tell you like how worrisome is this, for instance. Like in Italy, so I cannot talk about Europe because there are quite advanced nations in Europe and then other nations that are, you know, not so advanced in terms of being culturally forward and anticipating what the future is about to produce. And so Italy is not forward thinking, for example. Political discourse doesn't really deal with the technology a lot. This is very kind of disappointing actually, but this is what it is here. Yeah, you hear our prime minister, who I don't think has any clue about what's happening right now with daily breakthroughs, which are confusing even for me, that I basically breathe and sleep into these things daily, and I'm confused. But our prime minister, our politicians, like, have no clue, which is worrisome, because, like, how do you lead a country without knowing the major forces that are shaping the present and the future?
Yeah, for sure, because it's going to affect every human across the world.
Yeah.
Are you seeing, and maybe you're not in the college and universities much, but, you know, I mean, are you seeing computer science and AI, and are those being taught in a lot of the schools there?
I wouldn't know. I don't know. Okay. I mean, I have a younger niece, a couple of them actually, and I tried sometimes to talk about the kind of things that I'm doing, but they look at me like I have horns when I... So the thing is that with these kind of technologies, either people are very opinionated because they've seen so many movies about them, and so they think that they know what they're talking about, or there is nothing. But to have actually a meaningful conversation over these things is quite hard, because it's really hard to unlearn what you think you have learned. And a lot of ideas that we have towards this kind of technologies comes from opinions that we have absorbed with media, basically, which is not necessarily all bad, but a lot of it comes from there. And therefore, since you eat so much of it, you kind of think that you know what you're talking about, and then actually you don't. It took me some time to go through this process of unlearning and say, okay, I actually don't know this thing. Let me research it more. This might be a little strange for you because you actually studied these things. So for you, it's a given, but it's not. You know, when I talk about these kind of things, when I say that, they would be probably, I told the woman, a younger woman, that she was studying medicine. And you know, I told her that at some point we were all gonna use AI assisted tools for diagnosis, to help us with operate to surgeries and all these kind of things, because she must have been 22 or 23. Like, she had no clue that this was happening. And I made a joke and I said, oh, you know, actually, if you're not careful and you don't become skilled enough, you might actually be displaced in 20, 30 years, because this is. And show me a middle finger, because she was like, oh, what you're saying? I'm like, oh, yeah, it's true. So you better look at what's happening, because you decide how you want to keep learning so that you don't become obsolete, or you stay relevant, you know, however you want to phrase it. I don't know.
Yeah. Or like you say, you use the tool to make yourself even better. So it's not a competition.
For now.
yeah, well, for sure. It's always changing. That's what's so exciting, I think, for me in this space. So, well, Antonio, two questions is how do people get a hold of you?
LinkedIn. So
that's Antonio, best way.
Yeah, so LinkedIn, this is what I use normally.
Perfect. Okay. And I'll be sure, like I mentioned earlier, we'll have, you know, liner notes in there with contact information to get a hold of you. And then, you know, is there anything else that we maybe didn't touch on? You know, were there other concepts or things that you wanted to maybe share that we didn't really talk about?
I don't know. I'm interested in hearing how do you see, you know, the future unfolding? And you as an American, you know, you also see, and as a technical person, so you also, so you see the power, but you also see the danger because of you know, the highly polarized society in which you live, for example. So I was wondering, like, do you have any take? How is it for you?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about sort of the polarization. I mean, I think that's always been going on here in the United States, you know, Republican and Democrats and, you know, conservative liberals sort of back and forth. I think the fear that I have right now is, you mentioned on social media a little bit, everyone has their own feed, right? And so, you know, my parents are seeing something totally different on the internet than what I'm seeing. And what I'm seeing seems to be just reinforcing my habits, reinforcing my beliefs. And that's what's happening, is people are getting stuck in their own echo chamber and they're seeing their own articles that are spun by, quite honestly, just lies in a lot of cases, I believe it. But they're looking at what I'm reading and they're thinking that my stuff is lies. And you start having sort of two sides that can't come to the table because everyone was trained with a different model, right? Mm-hmm. To bring it back to the AI machine learning thing. Everyone was trained with a different model. And so their core beliefs are just completely too far apart because they've been fed through the matrix of the internet stories that just continue to reinforce what they believe and what they read. And I just kind of see it in my Google News feed. Like I read stuff, I click on things, and all of a sudden the next day I'm getting more of that stuff. And I'm getting more of that stuff, and I'm getting more of that stuff. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, and then I talk to my parents and like, have you seen this article about this, that? And I'm like, no, I haven't. And to be honest, like, I don't even really care about that per se. And I think that's fake news in a lot of ways. That's my fear around this stuff. And then you throw in all of the deep fake things where people can look like whoever they want online. We can start doing videos now with, you know, essentially generative artwork. You're going to be able to see somebody and the fear of my, and now they're going to be able to talk like them and mm-hmm. write like them. Mm-hmm. The fear is that you're not going to be able to believe what's really true anymore. You know, was that generated by AI? What I read, was that true? Was that not true? And so, you know, truly finding like reality in some ways, and I'm pushing it to an extreme here, is what I sort of fear. Now, I'm not the kind of person who throws my hands up and be like, we're all doomed and this is going to basically end. I think you said earlier on, you're kind of generally an optimistic person, you know, it's like, that's the view that I have is this is another tool. And, you know, hundreds of years ago, once a new technology advancement happened, a lot of people threw their hands up and said, oh, you know, we're not going to be able to, like, there's going to be no farming anymore, right? We're basically going to be, you know, using all these machines and everyone's going to basically going to move to the city. Well, no, there's still a lot of work to be done on the farm to grow food, right? New practices need to be put into place. So, you know, I don't view this as an end-all be-all of like, okay, we're done as a society. But those are the things that are sort of top of my mind right now. And we just went through it was our midterm elections back in November. So it wasn't the big election for the president of the United States, but we went through a lot of midterms. And yeah, it is ridiculous, I guess. And, you know, with regards to what people are saying and what's being written and what's true and what's not in a lot of ways.
Mm. I would say that because you were comparing, you know, being fed and you were doing this analogy with machines. There's the thing is that with, you know, when the machine makes a mistake, then there is, the objective function that tries to correct and actually updates all the weights.
Yes.
And actually says, oh, so maybe we have to. And so machines are capable of doing these things and we are a little bit slower in this regard. Because it's harder for us to change our mind once we are set on something. I even see it with myself. Like it's come changing a little bit with age. I'm learning to see other things a little bit, but it's still hard when you're set and you think you have it, you know it, to update, to, you know, back propagate, to change the way. It's hard, man. It's really difficult because it takes a lot of work. It's easier to believe that your part is the whole and then everyone else is wrong.
Well, I mean, you know, if when you go to train, at least with a supervised training model, you have things labeled. So you throw out a picture of a cat and you know that you've labeled it as a cat. You know the truth on the outside of it. That's what I think is so hard is if you don't know what the truth is, or at least everyone has their own truth answer, it's labeled differently. Then it's really impossible to retrain the model.
Yeah. There is an article that AI writer Alberto Romero wrote recently that's very interesting about these things. And it talks about, well, this is another kind of worms that I don't want to open. But anyway, because it talks about empathy and machines, because people are getting confused over the fact that machines are showing signs of awareness, consciousness, and we are building empathetic relationships with them. But anyway, so he says that, to cut everything short, is that it's very important for him to have a shared representation of reality if you want to live in a functioning world and in functioning society to agree at least of minimum the number of ideas and concepts, because so that we can all sit around the same table. Since this number of basic number of things is shrinking over time, it's becoming increasingly more difficult to keep things together, because you need to share representation of reality. We don't even agree whether the world is round or flat.
Right.
I mean, you guys have this problem over there a little bit more than we do here. But even on really basic things, we are getting more distant.
That's interesting. Yeah, that transcends technology. I mean, that's just, I think about countries and world politics talking to each other. Like, you're right. You have to come to the table and have some sort of base understanding to work together.
Exactly. Like, if you don't even agree on the shape of the... So I don't know how many, you know, flat earthers are in the U.S., but if the number is low, okay, but what happens if the number goes up? And we're already witnessing these kind of things when it comes to, you know, vaccines, no vaccines,
like
things that we thought were granted, and we don't agree with these things anymore. So it's a challenge. It's an interesting thing. And the thing is that we often face the discussion with a specular approach. I'm right, you're wrong. And even the other part does exactly the same. What you believe in is false, but what you believe in is false. And so if we cannot find a way to bridge this attitude and to, I think, give up, it's a rhetorical strategy even, to give up a little bit this attitude of I know better, it would be very hard for us to keep things together on the long run. So this is something that we need to discuss and think and be open, especially, I think.
Oh, that's great, man. Yeah. So we'll end this conversation on applied AI on more of a philosophical note, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So definitely away from the technology, but very much important because, as you said, you know, even if you, if you are working with an AI, any sort of, you know, intelligent being, whether it be a human or a computer, you need to come to this agreement, no matter what happens, either today or in the future. Makes a ton of sense. Well, Antonio, I appreciate the time today. Thank you so much. And look forward to having you back on the program in the future.
Thank you.
You've listened to another episode of the Conversations on Applied AI podcast. We hope you are eager to learn more about applying artificial intelligence and deep learning within your organization. You can visit us at appliedai.mn to keep up to date on our events and connect with our amazing community. Please don't hesitate to reach out to Justin at appliedai.mn if you are interested in participating in a future episode. Thank you for listening.